I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We could take him off the lead for a bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
Do you want to do that? Because there's a lovely open space here, Josh. Now, Josh will throw the... This is his little toy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look at his eyes. I've got such a bad throw. That was about 2 metres.
This week on Walking the Dog, I went out with comic and star of The Last Leg, Josh Widdicombe. Josh is a cat owner, but he was keen to meet my dog Raymond, so we headed out to the beautiful Victoria Park, which is near his home in East London. We talked about his fabulous actress grandmother, why he hates confrontation, and why he never watches himself on TV. I had a really lovely morning with Josh. He was hilarious company, incredibly unspoilt by success, but also really curious about the world around him. Well, except for when it came to picking up dog poo. You can catch Josh on his new Dave show, Hypothetical, with James Acaster, which is absolutely brilliant, by the way. And it starts this Wednesday, the 6th of Feb. And also, if you want to see him on his tour, Bit Much, later this year, go to joshwiddicombe.com. I really hope you enjoy this, and remember to rate, review and subscribe. Here's Josh.
Shall I lead?
Do you want to take Raymond?
Yes, please. How old's Raymond then?
Raymond is two. What? He's 2 years old.
What a name.
What do you think of him, Josh?
I love him. I'm a big fan of dogs with human names.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that's a real... I think if we were to have a dog, I'd definitely... There's something that makes me, I don't know, laugh about just a dog with a human's name. It's much more... It's much more fun, isn't it? Raymond's absolutely done me there, gone the wrong way around me.
Well, you know what? Oh, is he doing a wee, Josh?
Yeah, I'm goodbye. No.
Oh, look, it's tiny. Oh, yeah. Do you see?
Tiny wee. Tiny really dog, though, wee. To be fair.
Yeah, he's a really small dog. Well, I think he likes you. I should introduce the podcast, Josh.
Yeah, sorry.
So,
Do I press a button or something? This is fine, right?
What, on the lead?
Yeah, if he goes too far.
You're
That's
doing
not
really
happen,
well.
Okay,
he's
cool.
On an extendable lead.
Yeah.
I like the way you're doing it.
What would you do?
You're sort of holding it.
Look, I'm quite Victorian, aren't I?
You look like, you know when those Victorian people, I say like you're around in that time, as a bit of weak observation comedy there, but you know when they take out us of the perambulator for the Sunday stroll? You're
yes.
holding it in quite a formal way.
Yeah, I
lead,
am, aren't I?
Which I like.
It's the lack of, I can't remember the last time I held a dog on a lead, if I'm honest. Look at him go!
He's really enjoying it, isn't it?
Loves it. So do you go out every day?
Yeah, I do. I take him out in the morning and in the evening. He doesn't need much exercise, but
no.
He loves it.
Must be nice.
So, this is Walking the Dog.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
I'm really excited, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm with the very wonderful Josh Widdicombe, who I'm a huge fan of.
Thank you.
And we're with my dog, Raymond.
Yep.
Who's a Shih Tzu.
Yep.
And, because Josh, you're not a dog owner.
I'm not a dog owner, no. Raymond's, I don't know what word I can use on a podcast, but I think we could get it across.
Oh, he's having a comfort break.
Comfort break, that's what you call it. Does,
I'm getting the poo bags
are
out,
Are you
Josh.
Totally dead to this as a grim thing to do as a dog owner?
Oh, I see. You mean am I anaesthetised to
yeah.
picking up poo? Well, you've got a baby, haven't you?
Yeah, and I'm pretty dead to that. Not the baby. The poo.
I felt nothing when that child was born. Nothing.
Yeah.
Are you okay with baby poo?
Yeah, I don't even think about it now.
Right, I'm going to pick it up. So, there we go.
Easy, isn't it?
It's not bad, is it?
Also, tiny dog, tiny poo.
Yeah, notice you didn't
offer.
Get
that on a T-shirt. Didn't
offer. You didn't offer to help with the poo.
Should I have offered? Oh,
no.
I feel bad now.
So you have two cats.
Two cats.
And what are your cats called?
Eddie and Beryl.
Great names.
Yeah, they're strong names.
Yeah.
They're pretty aloof, to be honest, as cats tend to be.
Yeah.
I would definitely enjoy having a dog, but give it a few years.
Why?
Just because having a baby's enough. It's taking over a bit. It takes over, obviously.
Yeah.
It's quite all-consuming, it turns out. Like, the month before Rose was due...
Yeah.
We'd be walking around the park, and I suddenly got really into the idea of getting a dog. I don't know whether that's some kind of weird...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I was just always going, we need to get a dog. Maybe it was, like, a last-minute panic. Or maybe it was some kind of hormones thing.
Well, I think there's probably a sensible idea to wait a bit. I think you're right. Because do you know what? Nothing prepared me for quite how much work it was.
I bet.
Did you feel that about fatherhood?
No, because do you know what? I was fully prepped for it to be apocalyptic, kind of. I'd had enough... You see these people going in pretty laissez-faire and you're like, you're going to get a shock. But I was like... I was ready for it to be bad. And actually, in terms of the tiredness...
Yeah.
It was the opposite of what I thought it would be. In the... It's the nights that were... I thought it would be like trying to work in the day.
Yeah.
But you can get through anything in the day, really, when you're tired.
Yeah.
It's the nights. And actually, to be honest, I've stopped drinking so much, or stopped drinking completely for the last month. And so I'm actually less tired now that I've got a baby, because I'm not hungover.
Yeah, I saw you mention that was it on the last leg you were saying you'd stop drinking?
Yeah.
Why was that?
That is a series of reasons. One, I couldn't for much longer deal with that awful feeling of what did I do last night, if you know what I mean. I don't know how much, if you're a drinker.
I don't know if I've had that since I was about 20.
Have you not? God, I don't know anyone that doesn't have that. Not like, I don't mean like waking up in a bin. Like,
we're just like waking up and like... Waking up in a hotel room with a tiger.
No, more like just waking up and like going, yeah. No, waking up and thinking, what did I say?
It's a Saturday night for Josh.
Yeah. No, it's stuff like, you know, you wouldn't remember conversations properly and you'd think, oh God, I hope I didn't say anything
right. Stupid.
And also, so a combination of that. And then I stopped for a bit and I realised... So much more productive. I know that's a really boring thing to say, but
yes.
Like,
no, it's true.
Your day is just you're like, where have all these hours come from?
Well, actually, Sarah Millican, who I interviewed on this podcast, she said exactly that to me. She said partly her reason for not drinking is that she doesn't have the time.
Yeah.
She doesn't have the time to devote to feeling shit
yeah.
for the morning and writing off 4 hours one
totally,
Tuesday.
Totally agree.
And I don't drink for that reason.
Do you drink not at all? That's not how they word it. That was a bit Yoda, wasn't it?
I liked it. It was like you were sort of Italian and you Googled how to ask me that question. And I really appreciate the effort, Josh.
No worries.
I've sort of stopped drinking. I mean, it's sort of, you know, weddings and bar mitzvahs and funerals, essentially.
Yeah,
but
the big three.
Just to be polite. I think.
Right.
But I've stopped enjoying alcohol, and I think it's for exactly that. I have that sense, but then I'm a little older than you, and I think when you get to your 40s, it is that sense of I haven't got much time, actually, and I don't know how much of it I want to spend just lying in bed feeling shit.
Yeah, so I don't know if I've stopped forever in the same that you can't just... I think if you think, I'm going to stop forever, it's too vast, isn't it? It's too scary.
Is it?
Well, I think you just take it, you know... Take it a day at a time, really.
I like most people say that about giving up drink, whereas you're
that's
saying
what I mean,
that about clinging on to it, I think.
Oh, do you think?
Saying, I don't want to give it up completely.
No. I tell you what I don't want to do is make any big pronouncements that will come out and bite me on the arse.
Yeah. Oh, look at that one, Josh.
Oh, that's a nice dog, isn't
that's
it?
That's a nice dog, isn't it?
I'd
is
much
it?
Prefer a small dog, though.
Do you?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I think they're, A, cuter by definition of being small, and B, you know when you go to someone's house and they've got a big dog and it's a bit much? Do you have that?
Your new tour.
Yeah, that is the name of the new tour, actually, yeah. But that wasn't me getting it in.
No, we will get on to that.
It can get a bit too overly physical. I don't think Raymond's ever going to take me down.
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. And also there's that sort of the genital examination at the door.
Yeah.
You know.
And you have to be polite and pretend it's amazing fun when they've got their legs on your shoulders. And you're like, this is totally unacceptable.
Yeah, I don't really like it when dogs, when their limbs look human.
Yeah.
You know when they sort of leap up and I think, oh, you're like a really skinny, weird man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I like that about Raymond because...
There's no doubt that Raymond's a dog. Do you know what I mean?
You see, I think your daughter would like Raymond.
Yeah, totally.
Do you think so?
Well, she chases the cats and they don't buy into it. They've got one of those... So they've got a cat flap, but you know where they're like chipped, so they can go through the cat flap but no one else can. And they'll go through and she can't work out what's going on at all because then she can't get through the cat flap.
Oh.
Hello, Raymond.
Come on, Ray. So, Josh, talk me through your pet situation when you were growing up. Because you were born in...
Devon. No, I was born in London, actually.
You were born in London. Then when did you move to Devon?
Moved to Bristol when I was 6 months.
Bristol?
And then moved to Devon when I was 3 and a half.
Ah. And why was that?
The reason I was born in London was that my parents were living with my gran, who lived in Ealing at that point.
Right.
And then we moved to Bristol. And then I've got half brothers and half sisters from my dad's first marriage.
Oh,
and they
right.
lived in Cornwall. So I think it was more to be near them. And also my mum really into horses, so wanted to live in the country so she could have horses. So that was the reason. And then my gran moved down with us and kind of... We bought a house and she had half of it and we had half of it.
Is she the one who was an actress?
Yes, she was an actress. So she was in the first ever soap on radio, Mrs. Dale's Diary.
Oh, yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, so it was like, I don't know when that would be, probably the 50s?
Probably the 50s, yeah.
Yeah, so she was Gwen Dale, the daughter of Mrs. Dale. I think the whole thing, the premise of the soap was that Mrs. Dale was like, it would each episode would start with Mrs. Dale writing her diary entry for that day, if you see what I mean.
Right.
Quite a neat little premise.
Yeah.
And maybe they should bring it back. And maybe that'll be my thing. I'll bring back Mrs. Dale's diary. And
Adrian Mole was a ripoff.
Yeah. Sue Townsend. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
So it was all... So she was in that. And she's kind of knew everyone in that sense. If you'd be watching TV and she'd go, oh, he is awful. Or vile man. And or she'd like people, depending. Mainly hate. You know what the acting world is like.
And, well, I love those. I grew up. Which way should we go, Josh?
I'd go left.
I haven't even told the listeners where we are, by the way. Which is... Well, you tell us where we are.
We're in Victoria Park, which is my local park.
And it's so beautiful.
It's really nice. You know, I'm saying it's one of the most underrated parks in London. And that's a boring thing to say, but I stand by it.
No, Josh,
it's
I
great.
Agree. There's fountains and
yeah,
beautiful
it's really
cafes.
Nice.
There's a...
The other side of it's really lovely, kind of. And it's big as well.
And it's really well tended.
Yeah, they've got some sign up saying they want best park in somewhere or something. So they're really, they go for it.
Yeah.
We're about to see the Chinese pagoda around the corner.
Wow, Ray, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, do you like a Chinese pagoda?
Come on. Yeah, so anyway, your grandmother, the reason I like the sound of her is I grew up in quite a theatrical... family and
yeah.
we always used to, my sister and I would call, if you walked into the dining room when my parents' friends were around, we'd call it the pea super because of the cigarette smoke and
oh really yes.
the noise and the, and it was always kind of, well, they've offered me a who, it's hardly a Hamlet, but it pays the bills. It was lots of RSC people. And
I like that.
Yeah, I like those people.
I do, like, I know obviously they get a bit of a bad rep, but... Like, my gran would smoke a lot, so, yeah, her house was a bit of a pea super. And do you know what? If ever I smell, like, cigarettes in a bin, I remember my gran. Isn't that a weird thing? Because whenever you'd use her bin, it would, like, stink of cigarettes. So that's a real, like, nostalgic smell for me.
I love this.
That'd be one of my desert island smells.
I love the thought of you sort of... having a nostalgic moment, weeping silently over a load of old fag butts outside the smoking area. So you moved to Devon and did you have pets?
Yes,
ever?
So we had a dog.
Oh, did you, Josh?
We had a Jack Russell called Scrapper.
Scrapper?
Who was pretty brutal, pretty attacking.
Yeah.
Nice dog. Then she lost an eye. By the time I was a teenager, she was one eye.
Mm.
And then she... And then the other eye went bad as well. I think she basically ended up being a blind dog.
Right.
And we had a cat as well called Wilger.
What's it called? Will?
Wilger, which I think is a type of potato.
That's
quite... Raymond stopped and I just carried on. That is awful dog bullshit.
Come on, Ray.
She's a nice cat. She died by having a heart attack and falling into my dad's arms.
Really?
Isn't that a sweet story? Or awful story, depending. By the way, that's not the Chinese pagoda I haven't made.
Oh, it's lovely, though.
Here we go. Stand off.
Are they Westies? Hello.
Yeah. Does Raymond fight back?
No. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh.
What are these dogs? Hey. Are they Westies?
They are, yeah.
They're lovely.
Oh. Nice dogs.
Yeah, they are.
One's more angry than the other, isn't it?
No, she's just jealous all the time. Yeah.
She's jealous?
Yes. Yeah,
oh, well, it's very nice to meet
Lovely
you. Say bye,
you.
Raymond.
Yeah. Hey, cheers. Thank stuff, you. Yeah. Nice to meet you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So I'm going back. We'll go back to Devon.
Yeah.
And you've got the rather sad story of both one animal going blind and
yeah.
the other having a heart attack.
I mean, they have both had a good innings.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, they were both, like... I'd gone to university by the time the cat died, so that cat must have been 15 at least.
Yeah.
So,
and
don't worry.
And were you, what
it.
Were you like as, at school, Josh? Were you...
Bit of a non-event, really. Like, you know the kids that are neither the cool kids nor the uncool kids? Like, totally cruising along in mid-table. Everton. I was very mid-table in every way, if that makes sense.
And were you...
Such
were you
a boring
funny?
Origin story. Not really. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I thought that when you asked Matt Ford that. I thought...
Oh, on the podcast?
Yeah. And I thought, I wonder what my answer to that question is. And I still don't... I haven't got any of that, like... And then I said this joke and I thought, everything's fallen into place. This is what I'm going to do. At all. That's not... I was very into comedy, though.
Yeah.
Raymond loves bins.
He really does.
Really loves bins. Like me with cigarette bins.
Well, I was going to say, like you.
reminds him of one of his relatives,
the smell of poo.
So I didn't...
You didn't have that sort of moment, you know.
No,
not
at all.
That road to Damascus. Well, it's sort of that moment that people talk about. Well, Matt Lucas talked about it on his podcast about making teachers laugh at school. Not making teachers laugh, doing impressions of his teachers at school and all the boys laughing. And he thought, oh, this is a thing I've got.
Yeah,
this is a currency. It's that notion that comedy could potentially be a currency for you.
Yeah, and it's just what I didn't have that, but what I did have was, and I don't think I realised at the time, but I was far more into comedy than everyone else, I think, without realising that other people weren't into it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So there was I'd watch all of the, I mean, obviously everyone thinks that they're, youth is when everything was the best on TV and music and all that. But, like, you know, it felt like every Friday it would be, like, The Far Show and Father Ted and, you know, and Shooting Stars and TFI Friday and then Fantasy Football. And it felt like this kind of infinite amount of brilliant comedy was out there.
Yeah.
That I was really into. And I wonder whether that kind of shaped me into wanting to do it more than my own kind of school experience or anything like that, if you know what I mean.
So you weren't sort of one of those people, you know, in the sort of, you know, the kid at the family gathering who has, well, I always call it the look at me gene.
Oh.
You know those people?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had it a bit, if I'm honest.
You
like,
did?
Well, I remember I found a letter years later my mother had written, and it was, and she said, Emily is a dreadful show-off. And I thought, at first I was like, how dare you? And then I thought, yeah, I was. And would someone have said that about you?
I think maybe to an extent, but I don't think... I think maybe at primary age. I went to a very small primary school. There's four people in my year, so there was only 40 people in the school. And I think I was probably quite a big fish in a small pond at that point. And I was the lead in the school play. I was Robin Hood. So, you know...
Yeah, well, don't boast about it.
You can't argue the credits. You can't argue the credits at the end of the day. You don't get that unless you can do it, right? I think once I went to a big school, I kind of disappeared. So I think I was much more shut off. But you'll see a documentary on Spandau Ballet, right, or something, and it'll be like Martin and Gary Kemp going, well, we were always doing shows for our parents. And I think everyone was doing that.
Interesting,
it's just that when you've then become a performer, you like to use that to kind of join the dots a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, though.
That's an interesting point. I wonder, you know, it's like when you hear people say, well, I always knew I was going to do something different and be famous. And you think, well, everyone sort of thinks that they're different to a degree.
Course. I totally agree. I think it's, you know...
It's a kind of revisionism, isn't it?
Totally,
I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone in their life is like, you know, you're looking for those patterns, aren't you, I suppose?
Raymond's just...
Here comes
three there's
dogs.
A nice lady we met before. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hi.
Raymond. No. Very cool around other dogs, isn't he?
He's really good. He's got the confidence of the never knocked back.
Of the never knocked back?
Yeah, he's sort of like the David Beckham of the dog world.
Have you gone to training and stuff?
Yeah, I went to dog class. I went to puppy training classes.
Yeah.
But I took him when he was a bit too old. And
oh,
I didn't.
Really?
I made a mistake, and I took him when he was about 9 months, and so I lied about his age when I was
Amazing.
There. And we had to go around the class saying how old our dogs
were.
Like
one of those Nigerian footballers that pretends they're younger than they are to get a big transfer.
They say they're like 22 and they're 50 or something. Those are my favourite footballing stories.
Yeah, I love that. So you lied to get him into the class.
I lied to get him into the class, and then I had to. And then I told the lie, and I thought, oh no, this is like one of those horrible Hollywood movie stars who's trapped forever, like having to. Oops.
Oh.
Ah, no.
What a lovely dog. Hello. Oh. What kind of dog
friendly,
is this?
She's nice. Staffy.
Oh, she's a Staffy.
Yeah,
I love Staffies.
She's quite small for a Staff.
Hello.
And very friendly.
She's very friendly. Look at that, Josh.
What Raymond does
is
run up to another dog and then just stand there and kind of go, this is me. Take me as I am.
Isn't
you know,
that sort of what
deal
you
with
do,
it.
Josh, for a living?
Yeah, I suppose it is, yeah. Yeah, it's not far. Good attitude, Ray. Is this par for the course in terms of speaking to other dog owners?
Yeah, and you know what? When I did the podcast with Lee Mack, he said to me, well, I didn't know dog walking was going to involve quite so many conversations with people. He was really taken aback by that. And it was interesting to me because I suppose someone like you, I mean, we just had a guy come up and he recognised you. And I can see how sometimes, you know, people, he was really polite. And I'm sure the majority of attention you get is nice. But it is a scrutiny that you do have more scrutiny than most people.
Yeah, I don't think... I'm surprised at actually the sociable side of dog walking. I presumed it was a solo activity, if you know what I mean.
No, people are really... That's part of it, I think.
And do you have the same walkers that you'll bump into?
Yeah, you get the regulars. It's like the regulars in the Queen Vic. I see myself as the Ethel.
That was an actress my gran knew, Gretchen Franklin. There you go. There was an amazing episode of EastEnders, wasn't there, where it was like... just Dot and Ethel like this kind of iconic episode, and I think I read about it only existed because they'd run out of budget, so they needed to just shoot an episode with just the two of them. Like, they couldn't do a full episode, so they were like, we're going to have to just write one with these two characters.
And they sold it as a sort of Samuel Beckett play.
Exactly.
Come on, Ray. So Josh, so after you went to university, and
Manchester.
You did
linguistics.
Yeah. What does that involve then?
Not much. It's a study of language, and like, it's a concept. I mean, I won't lie, I kind of drifted into it mainly because I wanted to move to Manchester because I liked a lot of the music from Manchester. I bought into the kind of myth that Manchester's created around itself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I loved Manchester, it was brilliant. And I kind of just drifted into the degree because I think I lived in a time when you could drift into a degree and it wouldn't cost you 40 grand or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was all right at English language at A level, so I just ended up doing it. Do you know when you just drift, really, don't you, at that age? And I think it's quite a good age to drift.
Yeah.
You don't need to have made up any decisions by then.
Did your mum work for Dorling Kindersley?
Yeah. So she was a kind of freelance editor of... She wasn't freelance for when I was younger, but she became freelance.
What's he doing?
He's smelling wee and poo.
Oh, those are his two favourite
flavours.
Is
that duck poo?
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure. Oh, look at this one. Hello.
Hello. Hello. No, it's all right.
That's like the you of the dog world, Josh.
It is, isn't it? What's the name of this dog?
It's a Cavapoo.
Oh. Cavapoo?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is it a puppy?
She's 21 months.
21 months, okay. What's her name?
Molly.
This is Raymond.
Hello, Raymond.
I think you look like Molly,
yeah,
Josh.
It's not far off.
But that's no bad thing, because I think I look like Ray.
You do.
We got the same hair.
Did you think about that before you got Ray?
Absolutely.
Did you?
Yeah, it's very important. So, yeah, the reason I brought up your parents was that your mum worked for Dorling Kindersley and...
Yeah, David and Charles and, like, all that kind of... So she'd, like, edit those books, like, referencey books, like gardening and horses and stuff like that.
And your dad was...?
Various things, really. He was a builder for quite a while when I was a kid. Then he was basically house husband for a bit. You know, jack of all trades, really.
The reason I mentioned your parents' professions then is because I just wondered how going to university, I think it's changed now in that more people, that feels like the norm. Whereas
yeah.
I was the generation before you and going to university wasn't what everyone did. And I wondered, was there a sense of that was what you'd do? That was kind of expected
yeah.
of you? Or?
I don't think there was no academic pressure from my parents. They weren't like, you do this, then you do this at all. Thank God.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go just because I thought, like, obviously my older brothers and sisters are gone, and I just thought it looked really, really fun and a brilliant thing to do with 3 years of your life.
Yeah.
Which it was, really. It was great. I think a lot of comedians get into comedy because it's the closest you think you can get to being a student again.
Yes, I can see that.
Do you know what I mean? You're like...
Yeah.
And it's not, because actually... If I had a 9-to-5 job, I'd work a lot less. But there's something in your mind that thinks, if I'm a stand-up comedian, you know, I can sit around and watch Holmes Under the Hammer or whatever. I haven't watched a Holmes Under the Hammer in... Not a full one, anyway. I've watched 20 minutes now and again.
So when you went to university and you did your degree and then... Were you... You didn't do comedy while you were at university,
was it afterwards?
Because you started...
Yeah, I started when I was 25, I think, or 24. 2008. So 24, or just before I was 25 I started. And so I left uni, got a job at Waterstones for a year. Classic post-uni job.
Yeah, classic.
Classic, loved it, actually.
Did you?
Or looking back, I did. I don't know whether I did at the time, but I certainly... It's a fun one. That is a total still being a student job, if you know what I mean. Like,
it's a halfway house, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we cross there, you get the big part of the park.
Come on, Raymond. But you did some other jobs, which I'm obsessed by one of your jobs. Which
I know
is,
which one it's going to be.
Well, you say what it is, Josh.
Dora the Explorer. Is that right?
Do you want to elaborate on what the job was?
So I worked for a year at John Brown Publishing as a kind of editorial assistant, which is the equivalent of what would in TV be called a runner, I suppose.
Yeah.
But on Dora the Explorer, primarily, but also I did a bit on Angelina Ballerina as well. But I tend to do Dora's the headline, really. And so I'd write all the stories.
Oh, look, Josh.
How does this work with crossing
the
road?
Thank you. You just have to go a bit officious.
Do you? Come on, Raymond.
Please stop at the zebra crossing. Here we go.
There you go.
We've crossed into the other area of Josh's park now.
The bigger area.
Yeah.
And so you've basically watched an episode of Dora the Explorer. Have you ever watched it?
Because my godchildren, I think, used to watch it.
Yeah, it's quite a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still a thing, but you'd watch an episode and then you'd kind of turn that into the story for the magazine, and then you'd do stuff like you'd write puzzles and stuff like that. Good little gig, to be honest. It was first year I moved to London. What a nice job to get.
Well, can I say that often I've heard you tell this story on Graham Norton and rather surreally in front of people like Mark Ruffalo.
Was
it Mark Ruffalo?
Yeah, I loved Mark Ruffalo.
He was great, wasn't he?
Yeah, I really liked him.
But I've heard you tell this story, but can I say I'm coming at it. Careful of this dog, he looks a bit aggressive.
Yeah.
Pull the extender, Josh.
How do I pull the extender?
Just push on it.
Push on that.
So if you want to control it, you can stop it. Do you see?
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Quite useful.
Oh, I see. I'm questioning there whether you were afraid of the dog or the owner, because he looked pretty...
He looked a bit Brian Harvey.
He looked a bit Millwall, didn't he?
A bit, he did look a bit. No one likes us, we don't care.
No, yeah.
He looked like he did care.
Yeah.
So the reason I'm particularly interested is my first job, when I left university, was the Fun Day Times.
Oh, was it? Wow.
Yeah, I worked for the Fun Day Times.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
So I did similar things. And
yeah.
What was great was that sometimes, this was obviously the days before people were texting so often, so you'd have phone calls catching up with old friends.
Yeah.
And somehow it turned out that because Fun Day Times can be misheard and sounds like Sunday Times, people were thinking at one point that I was 22 years old and deputy editor of the Sunday Times.
Oh, what an awkward conversation.
I never corrected them, Josh.
Of course not. So can I ask what is in the Fun Day? I remember
it. The Fun Day Times was cartoons and puzzles.
Yeah.
Very much your arena.
Yeah, of course.
Your area. And we had Banana Man.
Ah, love Banana Man. Eric.
And we also worked with Dorlan Kindersley a lot.
Oh, did you?
Actually, yeah. So we do a spread of, you know, something about the inside of a car or how the human body... Anatomy broken.
I thought you were going to say, we did a feature on interiors. How to make the most of lamps. I loved it. It's weird, because those jobs that you have when you leave university, you don't realise how much kind of cultural capital there'll be in your conversations coming up. Do you know what I mean? Because there's... the amount of times it's like, what did you do before you did this?
Yeah.
But when you're doing it, you don't realise that that's going to be, like, such a big part of your life. There's other... Did I have any other jobs? Oh, yeah, I did.
You worked for The Guardian,
didn't I? I worked for The Guardian, didn't I? I wasn't very good at that.
Were you not?
No, it was rubbish. I was, like, a sub-editor. So your only job is to check spellings and make sure things are right. And I was, like, I was in charge of the kind of... the front of the sport and football websites... And there was a day when there was two big FA Cup upsets. I think Chelsea and Liverpool both lost to lower division teams. And I got both scores the wrong way around. And I thought, this isn't for me, really.
So when did you do your first gig, Josh? And when? Why did
2008.
Oh, yeah, you were saying... And what? Yeah. Why did you decide... What happened to make you decide you were going to do stand-up?
Didn't really... I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to write comedy. And, like... I remember because my brother and me would write stuff together. Henry's now, like, he's a big wheel in comedy, runs Mac Fests in Macanthus Festival, which is, like, I'd say the best comedy festival there is. And we wanted to get into comedy, and I think it's just... There's just a feeling that to get into comedy, you... Stand-up is a shortcut, it felt like, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
To write... Because it's a way of people seeing you rather than just sending off emails that it's just going to... We all know how many emails get ignored. So I never thought I want to be a stand-up. I suppose the word's drifted again, isn't it?
But what
as much
made
as you can drift into something that scary.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because...
Well, I tell you what I did.
Yeah.
I thought the only way to make myself do this was be to do one of those courses where you kind of learn how to be a stand-up a bit.
Oh,
and you don't really learn how to... It was really good, because it wasn't, this is what you do, this is how you hold the mic. It was just like getting your confidence up. So it was all just improv games and stuff like that. And, like, go and write your own material. And there was no, like, this is what you do, this isn't what you do. And it was just a way of making myself do it, really. I think now there's so many, like, gigs where there's, like, 20 people on, everyone's doing 5 minutes, and it's totally oversubscribed. And I started just before that kind of boom in stand-up, the kind of McIntyre's Roadshow-led boom.
What was your first gig then? Do you remember it?
Yeah, it was Laughing Horse Earls Court, and it was above a pub.
And how many people?
I don't know, maybe 20, I'd like to say.
Did you feel sick when they said, and Josh Widdicombe?
I can't, it's just that, I don't think there'd ever be something I'd do again that would be that terrifying.
Really?
It went well, I've said this before, but I think if it had gone badly, I just think I'd have given up. And I actually think, like, there's loads of people that would have been top comedians that probably just got unlucky with their first gig and just thought, well, this isn't for me. Because I had a good gig, it makes you go... Genuinely, I remember the next day, I remember I had a dentist appointment. And I remember lying there at the dentist appointment thinking, this is it, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. I thought, well, I've had a good gig, I must be good at this. And then you don't realise that it's absolutely such a long way to get there.
Really?
Yeah. I was talking to Acaster about when we were on the open mic scene. James Acaster, when we were on the open mic scene together. And, like, it's very easy to be nostalgic about it. But it was pretty brutal what you do to your life to get there. You're like, you know, 5 or 6 nights a week. I tell you what happened, really, is that... So I was in quite a long-term relationship when I started comedy. And then that kind of fell apart because I was... doing too much stand-up.
And had you met her at university?
Yeah, I'd met her at university. And then once that fell apart, you're like, well, I'm in now, aren't I? In for a penny, in for a pound. But do you know what you mean? Like, well, I've paid the price. I've got to get the prize or whatever. So I might as well try and make this work.
Because the narrative of that... particular story, if it was a movie, it would have been a terrible movie if you'd gone, and then we broke up, and then I just, yeah, nothing ever happened.
Yeah,
really.
I got nothing out of it. It was the biggest mistake ever made. But actually, we weren't suited at all, so it was a win-win.
I'm interested in what you say about comedy, because when I talk to Frank Skinner,
yeah,
I always say to him, there's something that separates you and most comics from other people, I suppose, which is that you're willing to take that risk, essentially. Which is most people, I mean, they have actual anxiety nightmares and about the idea. That's something that features a lot, being on stage and suddenly having a mic put in front of you and having to...
Yeah, totally. But, and do you know what? So at uni, we do, like, seminars and stuff. And it'd be like talking in front of 10 people. And I remember I'd go bright red in the face and my voice, you know that thing where people's voice goes? Like your voice like wavers because you're too nervous? And you're like, well, I had the opposite of the ability to perform.
Right.
So I don't know why I then managed to do it, if you know what I mean.
There are two types of comics, I always think. There's the sort of, you know, like Rod Gilbert talks a lot, doesn't he, about his... anxiety and shyness, and I always feel performing for people like that is interesting because it's a release, and it's almost like you've got an inner extrovert that wants to come out, and that's a channel for it. And then you get the, I guess, the more Frank Skinner sort of Rob Beckett types who are a bit more
Beckett's such a good example.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I would say I would say Rod, I would put with maybe more Gary Shandling.
Well, do you know what? You know, when I started out. So I knew Rod a bit because Rod knew my brother, and he also knew Ellis James, who I was quite close to.
Yeah.
Still am, to be honest. And Rod, like, is someone that I'm sure he'd, you know, it's not a secret that he would, you know, he takes it seriously.
Yeah.
And he, like, suffers for it, if you know what I mean. And that's, you know, that's the reason, one of the reasons he's so good. He's like, that show, his award-winning mince pie show, which I saw in Edinburgh in 2008.
You say that's your best ever,
best stand-up show I've ever seen. Straight stand-up.
Yeah.
You see that and you go, blimey, is that what it takes to be that good? But then you meet Beckett and you're like, bloody hell, he ain't got a care in the world, has he? And he's amazing. So it's different people, isn't it?
Well, Rob Beckett, when he did this podcast, said,
yeah.
He said, I walk into a room, Em, and I just think, everyone loves me. It's great. I walk in and I think, yeah, why wouldn't they like me?
I've got some views. I love Rob.
I love that. Yeah. I found that really infectious, and I thought, you know what? Be more Rob Beckett sometimes.
Rob Beckett. I was talking to Romesh about, God, we were like going, oh, God, I don't know about this tour that we're doing. Like, oh, God. I hope it's good, whatever. And we're just like, God, I wish I was Rob Beckett.
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
He's just got, it's a positivity. There's just something about his attitude to life, which I think is good.
I mean, I hope he never hears me say that.
We'll edit it. Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I want to talk as well about after you started getting into comedy.
Yeah.
And then you did, I mean, the last leg was sort of your kind of hit me baby one more time breakthrough moment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But you'd done,
I just think it was, but I think, that, yeah. And it was a fluke, obviously, the last leg. In the sense of, it wasn't meant to be anything. It was meant to be a show that we did for 10 days during the Paralympics. But I think that's why it was a success, because there's no pressure on it. You know, you see these shows with a, you know, where it's like, this is going to be the big thing, and people want it to fail, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no one wanted it to fail, because no one knew it existed. So it gave us a chance to kind of find our feet, no pun intended, with it, and like it became what it was, because you'd never commission it. It's an awful idea for a TV show. It's a terrible idea. Like three guys, two comedians and a guy that's never been on TV before, talk about the news for a bit and then bring on a guest and then they kind of finish on a big thing. It's like, it's not a format in any way, but it's that's kind of why it works, because it's just kind of found out what it is by doing, if you know what I mean.
I've noticed one of the most, when you put your name into Google, one of the things that comes up most frequently is...
Disabled?
It says Josh Widdicombe, disability.
Disability.
People trying to find out what your disability is.
Yeah.
But you don't have one.
No, I was kind of brought in as the man in the street, I suppose. Shall yeah, I get some treats out?
Look how excited he is.
Yeah. So how many treats do we go with? A few?
We'll give him one, because he's got such a tight... Look, he's sitting already.
And
sit.
What do I do?
Raymond, sit.
Oh.
Look what he's done, Josh.
Oh, he's put it on the floor.
While he's eating the treat. There he is. Yeah. See, he has to bite it into about a million pieces. Last leg we were talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the success of it, and, yeah, the disability thing. So people often say, what's his disability?
Yeah, and I think because I was just brought in as the bloke in the street, that's what my role was. It'd be interesting if people started watching the show now, whether they'd say it's a show about disability, if you know what I mean. Or whether... I often forget that... I know that's such a lame thing to say, but I forget that Adam and Alex are disabled. Like, particularly with Alex, like, you'll go, oh, no, of course we can't do that or whatever, because... But you just forget about it, do you know what I mean? Because you spend so much time with them.
But I think that's the strength of the show for me, is that... And again, it's not sort of virtue signalling, but it's just that sense that it's a great TV show and it's kind of irrelevant, you know.
I think if we were still, you know, that was the main drive, it would be over by now.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I know I'd be bored of it.
But it is a brilliant show, and it's also, because it's live...
I think the live element is so different. There's nothing else on really like that. I mean, Loose Women, but you know, like, you know what I mean, in terms of, like, live comedy show. It's very few things that are...
Do you think as a stand-up that prepares you for...
I think the best bit's the last leg when it goes wrong. That's the advantage of it being live.
Yeah.
Like, when we had Chris O'Dowd. I know people go on about the one where he was on and he was...
Was he... He'd had what my mother used to say. He'd had a few cocktails.
He'd had a few cocktails. But, you know, if that hadn't been a live show...
Which way should we go, Josh? I don't want to go near the skateboard park.
Right. No, of course not.
Raymond doesn't like...
Does Raymond not like skateboarding? I don't think you should be putting your own tastes onto Raymond. Blaming Raymond for your own.
You know when people do that with children?
Yeah.
We don't like that shop because they were rude to us, weren't they, darling?
So Raymond doesn't like skateboarding.
You know what? We could take him off the lead for a bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
Because there's a lovely open space here, Josh.
Nice, isn't it? It feels summery today.
Now, Josh will throw the... This is his little toy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look at his eyes. I've got such a bad throw. That was about 2 metres. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, no, we're talking about the last leg. And just how it's been a huge success for you. And you've done sort of, you know, Mock the Week and 8 out of 10 cats. And that
yeah.
was how, I suppose, you built up your TV hours.
That's yeah. what's amazing about Alex, is that I do think, like, with those shows on TV, it's hours doing it that makes you confident and good on them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Do you... prepare a lot? Are you quite...
We work Wednesday to Friday on the last leg.
But do you personally prepare, Josh? Like, are you one of those people... You know, someone like Frank Skinner, I would say he approaches... And actually, Jimmy Carr's like this as well. I would yeah. say they approach it in quite a disciplined, methodical
yeah, I'm
way.
Very, I'd say that is correct. Do you remember when you'd go into an exam and it'd be like, there's going to be 3 questions coming up about 5 subjects, right? And people would be like... I've revised the 3 I think it's going to be. And I think that's madness. You've got to be prepared that it can't go wrong. And obviously, it can go wrong, but you don't want to be in a position where you think, oh, I wish I'd prepped for this. It's definitely that with stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm writing the stand-up at the moment. You go, it's just hard work. I'm really obsessed with Blur. I remember, like, they did a South Bank show when I was a teenager, and I must have watched that about 10 times. And I remember Alex James saying, like, I always used to think you had to be a genius, but you just got to work really hard. And I think that's definitely the case with comedy. I think you've got to
Do
be
you?
Funny, obviously. But yeah, I think it's 85% of it is hard work. And it's not just like hard work, but it's like doing that work well, in the sense that you go, you know, when we're on the open mic circuit, you'd see people and they'd be like, oh, you've got to just gig every night. And then you'd see them 6 months apart and they'd have gigged every night, but they'd still be doing the same stuff that's not quite working.
Right.
And you're like, well, you're not learning from the gigs. You've got to kind of... There's yeah. no point gigging if you're not going to try and make it better the next time, if you know what I mean. So it's about just being really self-critical and working really hard, I think.
The self-criticism is interesting. Do you think you need a slight rhinoceros hide to be a comic?
I haven't got that, so
have
no.
Have you not?
But I do stuff like, I haven't read a review in 5 or 6 years. I don't read Twitter. I'd never Google myself. I don't read Chortle. So I just totally shut myself off from that area of it.
And would you describe yourself as a sensitive person?
Yes. Very sensitive to those kind of things, I think. I don't enjoy criticism. And I remember talking to a comic and he was like, if you read the good ones, you should read the bad ones. And I thought, why? Why make your life worse?
Yeah.
Why do you want to torture yourself like that? Also, the thing with the reviews or comments on Twitter, maybe this is wrong, but I don't know anyone of my friends that goes, tell you what made that bit better, when I read that review and they pointed out exactly what I should have done with it. Like, I think, like, either my peers or me would be the people that might be able to fix the bit. And I know when a bit's not working.
Well, it's that weird thing. I've written a book recently and someone said to me recently, so what, have you had any feedback? Because, you know, you're sending the concept.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it's written now. I don't want feedback.
Yeah,
I want sales.
Of course, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, what is the point in someone saying to me, I loved it, but I thought, great.
My friend went for an interview for a job recently and he didn't get it. And his agent said... I've emailed them for any feedback. And he's like, I don't want that. I don't want to know how I failed in the interview. Like, why do I want to do that?
Do you lose your temper, Josh, ever?
I think I probably do.
Over what?
Just like the great injustices in the world. No. What do I lose my temper over? I tell you what I lose my temper over, I think. When you feel like when I've got too much on, I just, and it gets all on top of me, and I struggle with that.
And how do you, what do you, how does that manifest itself when you struggle with it? Do you get grumpy?
Yeah, and I just like, I get angry, I lash out. Not lash out physically, but like you're just in a bad mood. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Never with I find it mad when people are like rude to like, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, someone listening to this going, well, he was actually very rude to me on a bus once or something. But like, people are rude at work or whatever, and you're like, particularly in TV, you're like, we are in such a lucky position. Because when you're the performer on a show, let's be honest, you can claim you're under a lot more pressure than other people. You're not. And you're not working the same hours as the production team. The production team is a thankless task. So you should kind of treat that with respect, shouldn't you, I think?
Did you ever have a period where you checked in with yourself, or do you check in with yourself and say, oh, hang on, Josh, that's a bit... You know, you're sounding a bit like a bloke on TV there. Do you know what I mean?
What do you mean?
Well, you know that thing, I think I've done it with myself, where, not that I do your job, but just things where I check myself.
If
I take something for granted, or I say, I don't know, yeah, handing someone a water bottle because you're going on air and not saying thank you.
Oh, that's interesting,
or,
yeah.
You know.
There's people that you get close enough to that you'll argue, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when, I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying, the guy that produced The Last Leg for quite a lot at the start for about 4 years, Ben Wicks, who's... brilliant, Ben. Loved him. But our relationship reached a point where we could argue, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's very different from snapping at someone because they brought you sweet potato mash instead of creamy mash. But we could argue because in the same way that you can argue with a partner much easier than you can argue with a stranger.
Yeah.
You know, it's like bands, isn't it, would argue amongst each other because they're close to each other.
Mm.
Who was I talking to? Presumably you've seen the Bross documentary.
Yeah.
And they were saying, I was saying about how I like, oh, here we go.
What's that little chihuahua, Josh?
Yeah.
Hello.
Raymond straight over to do his standing stock still.
Yeah. It's interesting the way he does that.
He loves it. It's almost like he just kind of... And then he's happy to be sniffed.
Yeah. He's like a supermodel, really. Yeah. He's just saying, look, this is my thing.
This is me.
Is to be watched and looked at.
But he runs to them to stop.
God, well, it's a bit check me out.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, so this is happening.
Bye. Well, he's broken another heart.
Yeah.
I don't mean to boast, Josh, but he's...
He's absolutely.
He's...
But he knows he's it. Do you know what I mean?
You think he all that, and he is.
Yeah.
You were saying about the creative tent... Oh, no, the Bross documentary.
Oh, no, just... You know the bit where they're arguing?
Which bit is that?
Well, the bit where they're arguing in the recording... In the practice room.
Yes, about the...
And my friend who was a musician was like, that's when he didn't like them, because he was like, all the poor other session musicians that are having to put up with this shit when it's their day-to-day job. And I didn't really think of it like that. Do you know what
that's
I mean?
Interesting, yeah.
Also, you know when they have the argument before they go on this morning? That was in the dressing room, which I used to use every week for The Last Leg. It was quite exciting. And there's a bit where it cuts to outside and they're in Star 10. That's what the dressing room's called.
You've had people like John Cleese, Ricky Gervais on your show. And what excites you is seeing your dressing room.
But they cut to outside the door and the star is peeling off the door. And it's obviously they've thought that's a good little shot because it shows how...
They peeled it off.
No, I peeled that off. I peeled that off when I was locked outside my dressing room waiting to get in.
So I want to talk about some more of your TV work because I really love Josh.
Oh, thank
your
you.
Sitcom, which is on Netflix, if anyone hasn't seen it.
Yeah, I didn't know this until recently.
I think the first two series are on
Netflix. I saw any money for that, but
Netflix.
Yeah. Who cares?
It's so brilliant. And
oh,
I think
cheers.
What I like about it is that I think it's like really densely written. It's all meat. There's no connecting tissue. You know, sometimes things feel flabby, whereas I said this to Lee Mack about not going out.
Yeah.
Every joke, there's so much in it.
I think that's a stand-up thing where you're afraid of not having jokes. It's got to be tight, hasn't it? What's the point in going 30 seconds without a joke when you could have a joke?
Well, Frank Skinner always says, why do people talk on the radio and not say funny things? He said, how could you just talk and be happy with that? He said, imagine doing a whole link and not having said one funny thing.
Yeah.
And sitting back and thinking, oh, that was all right.
I think, Frank, if I was like, write a list of things that have stuck with me as kind of like lessons and stuff like that, I think Frank Skinner said more perceptive things than anyone I've ever encountered.
So, Josh, I loved. And did you feel that was very much putting yourself, I suppose, centre stage in that Seinfeld way?
I found that most stressful thing I've done.
Did you? Why? For that reason?
A, it was by a distance the most work you can do. It's amazing that you can spend 6 months, you know, crafting something. It takes so long, and it's 6 weeks recording it, and then it's edited, and you're like, then you can just turn up and do a last leg. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was so tough. So it's so much tougher to get, because when you do stand-up, it's just a string of jokes shoved together, really. You find links, but it doesn't have to hold together. There's no plot that needs to hold together. Writing something like that is just so much tougher.
Yeah.
So much more kind of... I've got so much respect for people that can do that.
But are you proud of it, Josh, now?
Yeah.
You don't sound it.
I don't know.
Tell me why.
I don't know what I'm proud... I think when you do anything, I know this sounds like I'm fudging the question, you can just see the things you don't like about it. If you
Good. That's reassuring, because I always feel that.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that's natural to hate things that you're not hate? It's exactly.
Yeah, that you've done.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
I was thinking this the other day. I was thinking I don't think I like any of my previous stand-up tours.
Do you ever think people are lying when they say they like things?
Yeah. Oh, all the time. But that's because I often am. No, I mean, it takes... I've said I like things that I've not even seen.
Have you?
Yeah.
Are you an honest person?
Would you not do that?
Are you an honest person?
What? In the sense of, would I take a friend aside and say, I think that thing you did wasn't very good?
Yeah.
No, I don't see why would you do that? Because I'd hate them to do it to me.
Do you hate confrontation?
Oh, more than anything in the world.
What would you do if a friend upset you?
Would probably you... not deal with it. Probably, it depends how they upset me.
Would you tell Rose, your partner, and say, I'm really upset with them?
Oh, yeah, I'd talk about it for hours and hours and hours and hours, but I would be the opposite of proactive about it. What's that? Like, I just wouldn't deal with the situation.
If someone says to you, Josh, I'm really upset with you, something you did, and I need to talk to you, does your heart sink and do you feel frightened?
I can't remember the last time I had a confrontation, do you know what I mean?
Like with a mate. It's horrible, isn't it?
I don't know if I ever have with a mate. I don't know if it's a... I mean, it's so bloody cliched, isn't it? But I don't know if it's a man thing. But most of my friends, we're not talking about the things that would lead to confrontation, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Our friendships aren't built on the things that would make you confrontational. Because you're talking about things, do you know what I mean? Rather than this is a nice dog. What's it? What breed is this? I'm so bad
this
at dog breeds.
This looks like... What is this dog, actually?
Go on, do your thing,
Raymond. What kind of dog is this?
Walk up, stop.
Oh, it's a schnauzer. A lovely dog. Hello.
So nice, aren't they?
Beautiful.
See, I'd say today it's really pushed me towards the thought of getting a dog.
Has it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can at the moment, but... I mean, it's very idyllic. I'm sure if it had been raining today, it would have pushed me away from that idea.
I want to ask you about your new series, which is out very soon.
Yes,
it's out on the 8th,
Feb 6th,
I think. Oh, is it the 6th? Feb the 6th.
It's a Wednesday, yeah.
Wednesday. And it's called Hypothetical.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed it, Josh.
Oh, cheers. I'm glad. I'm so glad.
I know you don't believe that now, given what we've just
course.
Said. Of course.
No, I'll take it.
No, I really loved it. So it's you, if you want to describe what it is, it's you and James Acaster as sort of
hosts.
You're co-host. Are you co-host or you're hosting?
Co-host. No, we're co-hosts.
You're co-hosts.
But I do the kind of the furniture, I suppose.
Yeah.
And James is, well, his title is the arbiter of hypotheticals. He's basically, so it's basically hypothetical questions that we set to comedians, and then James kind of makes the rules, and we play out their answer with them, and then give them a score on how we think they did. It came about because basically I'm really, really obsessed with that kind of conversation. I love it.
So the kind of conversation we should say in the show is...
How much to do this is a... I could do that kind of conversation all day. And I still do. And now it's a bit weird because it feels like I'm trying to do my show. So we like hypothetical questions. So the first round is like, how would you deal with this hypothetical situation?
Yeah. Or they have something like, you know, if you were going to start a cult...
Yeah, yeah.
What would your cult be about?
Yes.
Which is a nice idea, because it's kind of, you know...
And it's freeing, I think, for the comedians. There's no prep, you don't know what you're going to be asked, and everyone's kind of chipping in.
Is there no prep?
There's no prep. We wanted to create something which people wanted to come on.
Well, that's it. I look at that, and I think that feels like a conversation. There's no desks, there's no buzzers.
Yeah.
There's no sense of besting other people.
No.
You can imagine being a woman in that and not feeling sort of squeezed out, quite honestly.
Totally. And, you know, the Guardian's, like, annual article about whether the panel show is dead that they'll do. I don't...
They do that.
They'll do it. And they'll swap every 6 months that we have stand-up dead. They're basically trying to really hit into my revenue streams. But they, yeah. I think the panel show is... It's just morphing into something a bit more... like. And I think Taskmaster's kind of done this,
yes.
Really.
Which... Were you the champion of all champions, by the way?
I am the champion of champions, yeah. Beat Beckett
by a point.
I love
the way you said that in a sort of... champion of all champions.
Yeah. Beat Rob by a point, which was glorious.
Yeah.
It's becoming less, hopefully, about people preparing jokes and doing it. And more about it being a conversation and being a cooperative show and something that people want to come on. I think the best panel show is Would I Lie to You? And I think the reason for that is because it's a game that you get lost in and it gives you a reason to be there. And you go, oh, if you put these six people in a room and they played that game, they'd enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I don't think you'd ever put six people in a room and
there's a picture of the transport minister here. This is fun. Can we play that thing?
Do you know what I mean? Like
exchange zingers about...
You'd never do like they think it's all over in your own time, would you? But hypothetical, it feels like a game that you could play if we were all sat in a dressing room and someone said, what would your... You know, if you had to... So there's one with Roisin where it's like if you had to... You've got 48 hours to have a selfie with Nicolas Cage, otherwise you die. Now, everyone's going to have a view on how you do that. That's a fun thing. How do you do that? And that's what we wanted. Do you know what I mean? What I like also is it feels like the people that you want to book are my generation and my friends. Yeah. And it feels we really liked that feeling.
I imagine you were looking up to, I don't know who you were looking up to, but, you know, the people you were, you know, like Jack D or
Frank
maybe people
or
like Frank.
Harry Hill or whatever. Yeah.
And then you think, oh, I'm one of them. Like, that must have hit you at some point. I mean,
you kind of do. It's amazing that. But you know that kind of feeling that you're never there, are you? I think that was one of the great realisations I had from seeing people that I thought were at the top. You never feel safe.
Do you think
you
not?
I don't think so. You never feel like, I can do what I want now because I'm Jerry Seinfeld or whatever.
Jerry Seinfeld feels that?
I don't know. I've used him as an example because I didn't want to name a British comic that might listen to this. Everyone, even at the top, I'm sure there's people that would look at me and go, oh, you've got it made. You know, what a great situation you're in. But I'm thinking, bloody hell. What if the last leg gets cancelled? Hypothetical doesn't get recommissioned. How am I going to pay my mortgage? Yeah. And there's no answer to that, really.
Well,
but
I suppose
that's what
keeps you creating things.
Totally.
Presumably, the minute you think, I'm all right, that's... I suppose, let's say you win the lottery.
Yeah.
I think that sense of not having any purpose, not having anything to get you up in the morning, that's a tough situation to be in, Ollie.
Yeah, and, totally.
And why
it's like when Christmas goes on too long, isn't it? You know when people will go like, there's this guy and he's like 23 and he sold an app for £10 million and you go, oh, well, I'd retire. And then you go, but then the reason Alan Sugar hasn't retired is because he's got the mentality that got him in that position and he's not going to lose that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is, and I think you get this in a different way. You get the same with comics in that if you've worked hard enough to get in the position you're in, you're not going to retire because you enjoy what you do. The reason you've got to where you got is because you love doing it, really.
Yeah.
So that's why you've committed to it so much.
Well, it's interesting that you're saying that because you're going on tour later this year, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, October, yeah.
So in October, and your tour is called...
Bit Much.
Which was interesting because when I interviewed Matt Ford for this podcast,
yeah,
and I said, what do you most fear people saying about you when you close the door and leave? And I'm going to ask you that question, so think about your answer.
Yeah.
And when I said it to Matt, he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, imagine they're saying, I like Matt, but he's a bit... And he said, much? We'll get back to your tour in a minute, but what do you worry most? I worry most, for example, if I leave and I close the door, I imagine and fear that people are saying, oh, God, she just never stopped talking. She's so loud. What do you think people might say about you?
Do you know what? I think it's dependent on the situation.
Okay.
Because I think you're different people in different situations. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, in a professional situation, and maybe this is going back to that thing of what we were saying earlier about being nice in that situation, is I would absolutely hate people to think that I was difficult to work with or a diva or something like that. That would cripple me.
But I don't think they would think that of you. So what do you think they would say about you?
I think in a work situation...
They might say Josh is a bit
finicky? I think I go round and round worrying about things that would get annoying. No, I don't think I am a control freak at all, actually. Not at all, but if there's something that I'm worrying about, I'll keep bringing it up and I'll just be a bit annoying about it, if that makes sense.
Obsessive?
Yeah, obsessive about things that don't matter. In a social situation, too gossipy. 100%.
Can you be trusted to keep
secrets?
Yes,
I can. Totally. I'm sitting on a great one at the moment. But, no, I'm all right with keeping secrets, but if there's something that's public domain, or when I go into, like, my agent's office, they'll be like, oh, you must have something funny about some comic or whatever.
Ray spotted two crows, Josh.
Yeah. No.
I don't think they're nice friends for you.
No, it's not his bag, is it?
I think
he'd prefer to be smelled by a dog.
They look, you're like a nice, furry, friendly type, and they're a bit oligarchs. I don't like them.
Yeah, they're not pleasant.
Yeah,
so I think that's definitely my fear.
Bit gossip. That'll be your next
bit
talk.
Bit gossipy.
So are you looking forward to that, Josh? Because you start, how many dates do you do?
So that's 37, because I'm doing it in quite quick succession. But then there'll be another leg next year, or maybe two, depending on stuff.
And you have to work it around your TV stuff, I presume,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, I am looking forward to it, because I haven't done it in a while. And I was really burned out with stand-up at the end of last one.
Were you?
I'd had it with stand-up.
Why?
Because I'd done it for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I just needed a break, and now I'm really enjoying it again. So I am looking forward to it. But I'm sure by the end of it, I'll be bored out of my nut. I'm so easily bored. That's why... Yeah, that's why I do quite loads of different things. I can't stand the idea of doing the same thing every week. Oh, so what's that?
He looks like he's a lovely golden...
Golden retriever?
Is he a Labrador?
Hello,
gorgeous. You know what he looks like? I'm going to go for what he is. I think he's a cross between a Labrador and a German Shepherd or something.
I mean, you tell me. I need to learn my dog breeds.
But he's lovely. He's
nice.
He's golden coloured. He looks like he could belong to the Widdicombe family.
He could. I look like a lot of dogs.
Do people think you're related to Anne Widdecombe?
Yeah, and when I met her...
Was she on The Last Leg?
No, I met her, filmed a little thing with her to promote Josh Series 2, bizarrely. And I walked in and she said, I knew this day would come.
Did she throw herself into your arms then? Oh, Josh, I've really enjoyed today with
I've had a lovely time.
Have you?
Yeah, really nice.
How have you felt about the dog walk then? I really feel it's...
Oh, it's calming. It's meditative, right?
Really?
What I find interesting about dog walking is I love the idea of it when your life is in quite a nice state. But the moment I'm on deadline or my life's in flux, it's another thing that I would have to fit into my day. That's how I feel about it. Is that,
yeah.
is that a fair
yes.
thing to say?
I think that's true. But then I think it's sort of a bit of an interesting thing, isn't it? Because... oddly making time for it, I suppose it's like exercise or, you know,
yeah,
it's like making time for it is what makes you better able to face those things.
Yeah,
strangely.
Totally.
Oh, I know what I was going to ask you, Josh. Do you cry?
Yeah.
Are you a crier?
Yeah, I think I am, yeah. Not all the time, but yeah, I'm not someone who goes, you know, those people that go, I haven't cried in 8 years. You know, that kind of weird. But like weird stuff, like end of films or something, and not even the ones you'd expect, or like Edinburgh shows or something.
Yeah.
But not like not all the time. I'm not. That isn't like something I'd. I'm not emotionally on edge. I don't think.
But Are you not?
But I don't think I'm emotionally unavailable, either. No.
Are you someone that people would go to for advice? Do you think?
I hope not. That'd be the last thing I need. Would I be someone who... Nah.
Like, would you have
what
friends?
Kind of advice?
Well, okay, let's say
career
relationship...
Advice,
no,
maybe.
Relationship advice.
I don't know. No, I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, maybe, like, to an extent, but I don't think I'd be the first port of call, do you know what I mean? But I don't think it would be bananas to come to me. It would be, like, fine. It would be... an acceptable chat, although I don't think you'd seek me out. But if I was there...
I'd love if you had a therapy business.
Yeah.
An acceptable chat, but you won't seek
you
me
wouldn't,
out.
You wouldn't seek me out, but you'd, you know.
What's your relationship with fame like? Because, you know, some people say...
Fine with it.
Yeah.
I don't think that... I'm not tortured by it in any way. Do you know what I mean? Like some people are. I certainly don't want it.
Someone
in the sense of, God, I hope they take a photo of me or anything like that.
Someone famous that I know sent me a text once, which I don't think they intended it to be so funny, but I'm afraid it was.
Yeah.
Because it said, it was describing how they'd been recognised by someone on the tube, and they ended it by saying, loathe fame. I suppose the reason that it's funny and that other people found that funny is I think it sounded... I didn't buy that.
I don't buy that. Because if you loathe something, there is a way out.
Well, quite, yeah.
And I also think, for instance, you said Lee Mack earlier.
Yeah.
Lee Mack is one of the biggest comedians in Britain. He's super famous. But he doesn't... You never think of Lee Mack except in his work. Do you know what I mean?
No.
And you can, as a comedian, it's one of the things you can do where if you don't court it, it's fine. No one's, your life is your own. That's totally a choice. And I do think comedy is certainly one of the ones where it's of no advantage, really. I can see in being an actor, it can be helpful to be to act like a star. But in comedy, people want the opposite of a star. No one wants a comedian who's outwardly living this showbiz lifestyle, because comedy's not about having a wonderful life, is it? It's about, you know,
it's about
frustration
truth.
And yeah, exactly. So I don't think in comedy it's as big a thing if you don't want it to be.
We're getting near to the end now. I can see, is that the cafe over there?
It's just there.
Oh, it's just there.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed today, Josh.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's been a much, much more pleasant weather than I'd anticipated when I woke up.
Were you worried about the rain? Were you thinking, I'm going to have to cancel
this? Do you know what? No, it wasn't the rain. It was. I was thinking, you've got a really seasonal job here. You've got a job that in summer must feel like the greatest job in the world, and in winter... I bet booking it's much easier in summer. They're queuing up.
You've been really good with Ray, Josh.
Well, it's, you know, after the initial holding it up too high, I've realised it's quite a cash job, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you were holding it up a bit like a sort of...
It's a bit penny farthing, wasn't it?
Well, I've loved chatting to you
today.
Yeah, it's
been really fun, really pleasant.
I think I've always admired you, and I think you're a really talented comic, and also just really likeable.
Well, that's where I've tricked you, because it's all hard work pretending to be those things.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that, and do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.